You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Welcome in into hour two of the program. My name is Lawrence Holmes, here with you until 2 o'clock. We talk with Cubs manager Joe Maddon to start the show and to continue with our baseball theme. That's right. We've got another guest in the house, and it is White Sox general manager Rick Hahn who joins me. What's up, sir?
Not too much. Thanks for having me, Lawrence.
All right. I wanted to make sure that this interview was a little different from the last time that you were on the show, because the last time you were on the show, I had to act as prosecutor. With my client being White Sox fans, as we tried to examine and figure out what was going on with Manny Machado. So I wanted to invite you back because I don't ordinarily like doing interviews like that. And I'm glad that we could kind of talk more generally about the White Sox and baseball and other stuff, too. There's all sorts of stuff I want to ask you.
Good. Well, but look, and
I'm gonna fix your mic. I'm going to totally fix your mic.
All right.
All right, because we want the people to hear you. There.
That good?
That's
you can hear me now? Yes. All right. Look, I'm happy to sit here as long as you want, cover whatever topics you want, including any prosecutorial questions you might have, because that's the time we talked. It was the day after the Machado decision, and you 100% did what you had to do in terms of asking the questions that people wanted answered. And the reason I went on with you that day was because I knew there were people who had questions that needed to be answered. So I'm happy to, you know, I don't want to quite belabor that same subject again, but if you need to touch on that again, we can, and obviously talk about whatever else is on your mind.
All right, well then let me ask you this in a general way. What do you make of all of the extensions that are happening in baseball?
You know, it's pretty remarkable in that it's certainly something we've done for a long time. You go back to I'd say Mark Burley, Paul Konerko were guys that we extended as pre-arb guys in through free agency to extend team control. Obviously, in more recent years, you've talked about Chris Sale, Adam Eaton, Quintana, Tim Anderson, and now obviously Eloy Jimenez. So it's obviously something that we've always pursued. We've wanted to be aggressive early in order to not only give us some cost certainty, but also to extend those years of control. Now, over the course of the last few months, I think we've seen, actually probably since the start of spring training, you've seen over $1 billion spent in the industry, primarily on extensions, and it is changing the face of future free agency, and that's going to have an impact. I think in the future, instead of potentially teams addressing their needs out through free agency when those needs arise, you're going to start seeing some more trades. And it's going to make for a little more interesting of an exchange. And whatever economic flexibility we might have when the time comes to address those needs, perhaps will be spent through free agency. But there's a very good chance and a growing chance with each of these extensions that ultimately we might address those needs via trade.
How do you feel the relationship is right now between labor and ownership in baseball?
You know, it's really two levels, and there's only one level that I really get to deal with. There's the White Sox relationship with ownership or management, which I think is probably as strong as any in the game in terms of open dialogue and open communication about where we're at and what we expect from our guys and what they need from us in order to make them better, you know, cryogenic chamber or whatever nutritional assistance or a traveling masseuse or whatever augmentation to the program we provide them. We do a very good job, I feel, of having an open exchange with our guys. At the macro level, at the league level, the league and player association level, you know, obviously there's some frustration in terms of some rank and file union members. The top of the market's still getting paid. Some of these young guys are getting their money via extension, but that middle class, I think, has some issues that ultimately will likely have to be addressed through collective bargaining in the next couple of years. Again, more at that macro level than the level that we deal with our individual players.
We were discussing this on the nighttime show a couple of weeks ago. And then, of course, when it came up with Eloy, you seem to have a knack for understanding the market to get extensions. You kind of went down the list of guys that the White Sox have extended over your tenure working with the White Sox. What goes into being able to read the market and trying to convince a young player who may be thinking of a Mike Trout payday that this could be in their best interest to do as well?
You know, it's an organizational priority. It's not just me. It's when we sat down with Jerry Reinsdorf and went through this plan over 2.5 years ago about the whole rebuild, there was an element to it about economics, obviously. And a section of that economic policy was being even more aggressive than we had been in the past in terms of getting guys done and trying to show even that we may need to sign a guy who has yet to appear in the big leagues. We may need to try to sign a guy who's in Double-A at some point, just the way the market is trending, in order to be able to get those additional years of control. Arbitration values have increased in the last couple of years. It used to be that first-time arbitration eligibility, you'd get some nice money, and obviously in the real world, fantastic money. But you were talking $3, maybe $4 million for the top end of the market. That's now shifted close to 8 to 10 for the top of the market. So the incentive for a younger player to lock something up sooner has become a little bit less because you're not that far away from making that life change in money. So we talked about wanting to continue to do what we had done with the Burleys and Canercos and Sales of the world, but needing to do it a little bit sooner perhaps in order to be able to continue that process of getting that extended control. And that, again, Jerry bought into it from the start. Obviously, Kenny was a big part of that. Jeremy Haber, our assistant GM, has been a part of that. And all we can do is put our best foot forward. We don't get all these done. I hate to say it, especially given sort of the mindset of White Sox Nation right now. You know, we do miss on some of these too. It takes a player motivated to, you know, make that exchange of lifetime security for extended control. And not every guy wants to do that. And when that player or his representative decides he doesn't want to do it, all I can do is, you know, respect them betting on themselves and hope they're right, because we all benefit if that player who bet on himself is right.
When you saw the money in the Mike Trout deal, what was your reaction?
You know, I don't know if there could have been any number that anyone you would have been surprised by. And obviously he got the most lucrative deal we've seen in the industry's history. I think everyone expected that. It was just going to be a question of magnitude. It wound up being, what, $100 million more guaranteed than Bryce, which I think raised some eyebrows. And at the same time, I think of the other side of the coin, you could have said, well, I'm surprised he didn't get $500 million and had with equal credibility. So from a fan standpoint, from seeing a, you know, generational type player spend his entire career in one uniform, I like that. Like, that makes me happy. That's the kind of thing we want to do here. We want to get generational type talents and have them in a White Sox uniform for their entire career. So I like that part of it. From the standpoint of, you know, one day potentially wanting to employ Mike Trout, yeah, that's a bummer.
We're talking with White Sox GM Rick Hahn here on The Score. He's in studio. Opening day is coming up Thursday over on the South Side. There are tickets that are still available. WhiteSox.com if you want to go get yourself some tickets. I got 4 for Saturday. I'm thinking about giving mine away, though. Think about giving mine. It's supposed to be a great day, Rick.
Like, yeah, this weekend's supposed to be nice.
67 degrees. I like to give away tickets to listeners, so I might give my 4 away to Saturday. Did you do like I did when the Mike Trout thing? Look, you're well paid. All right, no one's out with a can for Rick Hahn. But I found myself going, what would I do with $430 million? Did you at least put yourself in that space?
You know, I can't. I know how unique the talent is that is around me on a daily basis, that if I ever let myself sort of drift mindlessly into, well, man, with that kind of cash, I lose sight of the fact and the appreciation for how special and rare that talent is. But you're right. I do all right. I'm not complaining. So I try to stay out of that realm of comparing it to players.
I kept thinking about what island I would buy.
What'd you come up with?
I mean, I don't know if I could buy Costa Rica, but I would buy a significant portion. Not that it's an island, but that's where I would probably go hide. Me and the money would be somewhere in Costa Rica, just kind of hanging out, drinking tropical drinks, and earning 20%, as Hans Gruber said.
Well, there we go. Well, now we know where to look when the time comes.
Yeah, I know exactly where I'm going to be. How did the Aloy contract come to pass?
That was a long process. That was a long process, actually. That actually started with conversations going back to last season. Aloy was a guy who, unlike your typical 16-year-old Latin signee who you've known for at least a year or a year plus, we didn't have that deep 6-year relationship with Aloy and his family that we do with some of our other Latin signees, because obviously we acquired him via trade midway through his minor league career. So we initially knew what we needed to know about him from a player standpoint, from a makeup standpoint, from performance standpoint. during a short time with Winston and then Birmingham. Really, this offseason, we spent a little bit more time getting to know him, getting to know the family. Marco Patti, who heads up our international operations, and I went down there, had dinner with his family, spent some time with the mom and dad and his brother, Enoy. And yeah, it is Enoy Jimenez, the brother.
So it's Aloy and Enoy.
Yeah. He goes by Enoy. That's not his real name. His real name is Caesar, but everyone calls him Enoy.
Okay.
All right.
I got all that straight.
Yeah.
Okay.
I might change my younger son's name to Enoy. We'll see how this goes.
Why not?
But it was a process of getting comfortable on both sides, them knowing what we were about, the parents hearing from us, you know, what it means to be a White Sox going forward and how we view their son. We actually feel like, I personally felt like we were really close to getting something done at the general manager's meetings last November, which was about a month after or 6 weeks after we went down there and sat down with the family and the representative. But for whatever reason, it fell apart, and we started revisiting things in early March, and they came together over the course of the next, you know, 3 weeks or so.
Why do you guys feel like he's a player that's worthy of a long-term extension and buying out those arb years?
Well, part of it is obviously the performance and how we project what he's going to do between the lines. But more often than not, you can get yourself in trouble if you're only looking at that and you're not looking at the makeup and how the player goes about his business. Aloy is a guy who is consistently trying to get better, who's consistently trying to understand what he can do off the field, in whether it's in game preparation or from a physical standpoint or a nutrition standpoint. Look, last year, you know, we took some heat for some of the criticisms we had when we were saying why he wasn't getting called up. But one of the things that was very real and we were serious about is we needed him to clean up some of his nutritional habits and some of his training habits, because this is a player who has had a little nagging things here and there over the course of his career. And the thought was, if we were able to tighten up a little bit from a nutrition standpoint and tighten up a little bit, you know, look, he's a 21-year-old kid. He's making the same choices you and I made at 21.
Sure.
And we weren't trying to hit a 97-mile-per-hour fastball for six months on a nightly basis. Tighten up the nutrition, tighten up the training. We felt we'd keep him healthier for a little bit longer. Aloy took that very seriously, went out, and even though he's in the minor leagues and not making great money at the time, went out and hired his own nutritionist, had the guy come move in with him in Charlotte and prepare every meal for him and get himself in a position where when I went to go see him down in Charlotte in early August or so, he looked like a different guy to who we had seen earlier in the season. And that's part of what you're betting on. You're betting on the makeup and a guy who takes this seriously and wants, you've heard him say it multiple times, a guy who wants to win championships and is willing to pay the price to do that.
Okay. Well, that's good to know. Talking with Rick Hahn, the general manager of the White Sox here in studio on The Score, what necessitated, maybe necessitated is the wrong word. Why did you guys move Moncada to third?
We've been talking about this for a while. People, I think, aren't familiar with the fact or lost sight of the fact that he actually was on the left side of the infield as an amateur in Cuba. He played a lot of short, played a lot of third, and his comfort level over there was fairly high. When we first broached the topic with him midway through last year or in August of last year, he was excited by the idea. He made mention of the fact that he's got all sorts of Gold Glove awards from Cuba for his play at third base. Now, nobody's seen these things and no one's really familiar with the Gold Glove award in Cuba, but he insists he's got these things somewhere. So he was excited by it. And I think you've seen over the course of the last, certainly down in Glendale and even over the first few games over the course of the season, he's very comfortable over there. His athleticism allows him to make some pretty special plays over there. And we think the combination of him being comfortable defensively and making some of the changes he's made offensively, that he's in a position to take off.
Through four games, I've enjoyed ambush Johan, where last year he was in two strike counts a lot, struck out 217 times. And now it's like, okay, well, you're going to try to get over that fastball? Great. Now I'm going to hit it hard somewhere. How much work did Todd Steverson put in with Johan about changing approach and letting some of his natural ability take hold?
You know, Todd spent a lot of time with him, especially early, right after the season ended. Both he and Ricky. Ricky lives in Arizona now, but both Ricky and Todd met with Johan at our complex about a week, 10 days after the season ended, and he spent 2-3 weeks not only on some of the minor physical adjustments with his hands in order to help free him up a little bit better, but they went through every plate appearance over the course of last season and sort of talked through what the approach was, what the plan was, and how they got him out or how he had success. And with Johan, it's important. Look, the strikeouts obviously were too high, and we expect those to improve. But it is a little bit of a gentle balance because you have a pretty special player in terms of a 23-year-old who has that kind of plate discipline. And you don't want to squash that. You don't want to take that out of him. He's still going to strike out some. That's part of his game. But the fact that he has that level of plate discipline, the power to all fields, and the speed has the potential for a pretty special guy and a pretty special offensive talent. So really what we're trying to do is refine the approach instead of just, you know, radically changing it, because you really do have the makings of something interesting there. I'd much rather have the project of dealing with a 23-year-old with his raw abilities that knows the strike zone and saying, hey, we need you to do more damage on strikes earlier in the count, than the opposite of a guy who's a free swinger, doesn't know the strike zone. And you're like, hey, man, we need to rein you in. That's a much tougher process with a kid than teaching him to be more aggressive early in the count.
Anytime I ask you about Jose Abreu, and we've had this discussion on multiple levels whenever I go to the ballpark, I feel like I do him a disservice by talking about how important he might be to the White Sox versus how good of a player he actually is in Major League Baseball. That being said, does he hold more value to your franchise, and is there room as this rebuild continues for a guy like Abreu?
The second part's very easy, yes. As we continue through this process and we get into the position where we finally want to be and we're ready to win championships, there's certainly room for a Jose Abreu on that team when the time comes. Do we, to the first part of the question, and I think you've probably heard me say something along these lines before, I think we value him more highly than the other 29 clubs. It's part of the reason that even though we were in the process of trading all sorts of guys, all sorts of veteran players through this initial stages of the rebuild, it's part of the reason I never thought we were ultimately going to wind up with a match on Jose, because everyone can value to a similar extent what he does on the field. We all have our own methods, but they're all going to be within a general range in terms of what the offensive production of a right-handed hitting first baseman who puts up these numbers are. We tend to goose that up a little bit because we have the privilege of seeing him for 7-plus months a year and knowing what he means in that clubhouse, what he does for our young players, Latin and otherwise. The example he sets in terms of his work ethic, his focus, his commitment to the city of Chicago and our organization, it's hard not to oots that up a little bit in terms of the value that he has to us. A lot of it is unquantifiable, which makes it a little harder to match up on a trade, but it's important, and it's part of the culture change that we underwent here in the last couple of years. He's been at the center of that and played an important role in that for the last couple of years, and we foresee going forward as well.
I only got you here for a couple more minutes, and I promised that if I got you back on an interview that there was a particular subject that I wanted to talk about, and that is your Chicago Bears. How'd you feel about this past Bears season?
Look, it was magical and crushing at the same time. You know, I think here's the thing, and it's really, this isn't me complaining, but one of the things I've lost in sitting in the chair I sit in now, not the one in your studio, but as an executive with a pro sports team, is I've kind of lost the fan side of me when it comes to other teams that I've been passionate about. You've heard me say before, you know, look, when the Bears lost Wilbur to Washington, I lost my damn mind. And when the Bulls let Horace Grant go to Orlando, I couldn't understand it. Like, I've been upset. I've been that fan upset, not necessarily calling the score, but I've been that fan upset at every sports team in this city at some point over my life. Now, being sort of on the other side and understanding that there's a lot more nuance that goes into any transaction, and it's not just a matter of pay the man, I've lost a little bit of that ability to be that sort of rudimentary fan. That said, I'm fortunate enough, I got two teenage boys. I can see some seasons through their eyes, whether it's the Hawks or the Bulls or the Bears. We make it out to a bunch of different games over the course of the season. So I feel like, you know, when that double doink happens, I feel that crush. I feel that same pang that, you know, Bears nations feel, but I don't feel it quite as much as my boys feel, because they're still like in that sweet spot of fandom that unfortunately has been a little dulled off in my world.
Yeah. I figured I didn't even talk to you about this, but maybe I should have. I feel like you probably would have been more, it'd been more interesting to get your initial reaction to Mac being traded for by the Bears. Mm-hmm. Because to me, that was the signal of it's on.
Yeah.
Now, like, this is legit for real. They went out and got the best defensive player on the planet.
And it's funny, because you're absolutely right. The fan side of me was fired up. But the executive side of me might have been even more fired up, because that was that's a franchise-defining move. And those don't happen too often, and I know how difficult those are to line up. So when Ryan Pace and that staff and that front office was able to pull that off and change the face of that defense and really the identity, not just of the 2019 season, but the, you know, this window of contention for the Chicago Bears, the fan side of me was psyched, but the executive side of me had to tip my cap because that's not easy to do, and that's an impressive, impressive move for a franchise.
As our interview goes on, obviously, you know, there are White Sox fans who are texting in. For the White Sox fan that's sitting there wondering, how is this going to work? When are things going to be pointed upwards? What's your message to them?
Look, I think, obviously, as we enter year three of this, there are still going to be growing pains. These things don't happen over the course of three seasons, unfortunately. This is what we signed up for when we started the rebuild. This was going to be a process, a lot of which tend to take 5 to 7 years, a time frame which we felt we could beat because of some of the assets we were trading, and what we were going to be able to get back was a little more mature than just doing it all through the draft and internationally. I think over the course of this season, you're going to, knock on wood, we're going to see some real progress, whether it's from Moncada, whether it's from a more starts like we saw out of Giolito the other day, whether it's out of a full season of a healthy Carlos Rodon, Ronaldo Lopez, obviously Aloy being in the big leagues, and other of these young players starting to matriculate and mature their way to Chicago. We've got a good critical mass of potentially impact talent at AA and some above, and they're going to start showing up here over the course of the next 6 to 12 or so months, and that's really going to signal sort of the change in this. There's still going to be growing pains. I'm not going to sugarcoat this thing. I don't. Maybe I should have sugarcoated some of this along the way. But I've felt from the start, we felt from the start, the best way to handle this was to be direct and honest about where we're at. We expect more wins this summer. For me, it's as important how we get to those wins. Is it because Moncada is becoming the player we think he can be? Because of those young starters are taking the step forward? Because of our rookies are maturing? Because Tim Anderson is becoming that middle of the infield player that we think he can be? Or is it because more of the veteran guys are carrying the water? So this is an important year as we build to that next core, that next championship core, a championship core which we remain as excited about now as we were, you know, a year ago.
Rick, I appreciate you driving down and not having someone drive you here. I mean, that goes with your whole thing, though. Like, that's the whole, like, Rick Hahn thing. Like, he drives his own car. He's hanging out. He's not being driven around. But I appreciate you jumping in and being in studio. I'm glad that we had the chance to talk about all sorts of stuff.
Absolutely. Hope to do it again sometime, Lawrence.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with 3 rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.